Good evening. I'd like to welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David, and I'm an alcoholic. By way of housekeeping, we will only be recording and publishing the audio portion of this meeting. So, you know, feel free to have your camera on. Nobody's going to end up on the YouTube. You can also sign up for a low volume email list on our website, simpleactions.net. I put that link in the chat, as well as PayPal links. We'll talk more about that when the time comes. That is all the housekeeping I intend to offer for those who care to join us. Let's open the meeting with a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anybody here tonight in your first 30 days of sobriety? We would just like to welcome you by first name. Feel free to unmute and say hello. Mr. Lee, would you read the preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous if I put it on the screen? Oh, you can't unmute. Oh, yes, you can.
All right, I got you. My alcoholic name, Lee.
Hey, Lee.
And this is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problems and help others recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We're self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses or opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Thanks for allowing me to read.
Thank you, sir. All right. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. Tonight, we are going to discuss step 9, part 1. Please help me welcome our panel this evening. I'm so excited to welcome Neve and Hannah. You guys are great. Okay, let's see. Let me share my screen. I promise not to read you to death. We'll do the first reading. And then I think, Neve, since you've shared at the meeting before, we'll get you to go first and then kick it over to Hannah. But let me do the reading. And you can do it the opposite if you guys decide to do that. Anyway, we're going to start tonight on page 76. Now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. Neve!
Hey, I'm Neve. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is May 22nd, 2013. I've got a sponsor. She's got a sponsor. I'm available to sponsor other women. I don't have anybody right now, but I would love one. And I've got a home group and a service position in that home group. I'm so grateful to be here, David. Thank you for asking me. And Hannah, thank you for coming along as my buddy. You're the first person I thought of. It's a scary format. Just going to say that I'm a little nervous, but I'm going to do my best to ask God to get me out of the way and speak through me. So you can blame him if you don't like what I say. Step 9. I remember when I first came in, my sponsor had me underline anything that in Bill's story, anything that he was willing to do to get sober that I was unwilling to do, and making amends was something I underlined. She also had asked me in the beginning if I was willing to go to any lengths to get sober. So she reminded me of that. And I was, you know, by the time I got there. But from the passage that we just read where, you know, we have a list straight from our fourth step. That wasn't my my experience. I didn't have a list right from my fourth step because I resented a lot of people that I didn't owe amends to. When I first was doing my fourth step, I didn't, the word resentment was not a word that I used. I hated a lot of people, but I didn't think I resented anybody, you know, and so I thought it'd be a couple people, you know what I mean? My ex-husband, my parents, my sister, whatever, until my sponsor defined resentment as bitter indignation at having been treated unfairly. And that opened the floodgates of people that, because I was have been untreated unfairly my whole life. Not really, probably three times. Do you know what I mean? But like in my mind, in this alcoholic's mind, it's like if you, if the bartender waited on somebody before me, resentment, because that was unfair. If you were pretty, that's all it took, girls. If you were pretty, you're on my fourth step. Do you know what I mean? So it's like there were people like that I didn't owe amends to because I, you know, I just thought that I hated you because you were pretty. There's nothing you can say to make amends for that. So it wasn't a direct list from my fourth step, but I did make a list. And my sponsor, I took 7 months to do the fourth step. I do not recommend that. And so my sponsor was concerned that my eighth step would take a long time. So she had me write down the list of people, and she had me write down what I did, the wrongs that I did. And she had me cap it at 5 for each person, because she didn't want me to take too long, right? And so I didn't have 5 for everybody, but there were some people I had more than 5, so I had to like sum it up. You know what I mean? Like my parents, it's like, I disrespected you. You know what I mean? Like I had to sum it up in a way. But she had me write this list of the things that I did wrong. And it was so helpful because there are still people on the list. I still have outstanding amends that I have to make for various reasons. And I've got this forgetter that it's like, if I looked at that list now, and if it was just a name, I wouldn't be able to tell you now what I did wrong. Do you know what I mean? But like the fact that I have it written down has been so helpful, and it's been helpful in another way too. New York City, I have the unfortunate experience of moving a lot during my drunken days. And so I owe amends all up and down the Eastern Seaboard. And so New York City is a place that is teeming with people that I owe amends to. And so like when I'd go back up, you know, I would take a photo of like my eighth step list with me in case I ran into anybody, so that I was prepared to make amends and I knew exactly what I needed to make amends for. And I think that's all I got on this little passage. I'm going to pass it over to Hannah.
Thank you, Dave. Hannah? Thanks,
Steve. I'm Hannah. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is August 30th of 2012. I have a sponsor. I sponsor other women, and my home group is Speaking of Steps in Richmond, Virginia. So if y'all are ever around, we'd love to have you. I'm really grateful to be here with y'all tonight. Thanks, David, for facilitating and Neve for asking me to be here. It's really cool. Since Neve moved across country, that we get to meet up via Zoom and be at a meeting together here in Hampton Roads with y'all. So, as it pertains to this paragraph, I love the line, faith without works is dead, you know, and right here in this paragraph, it's talking about going from, you know, this, we took this, you know, this self-appraisal, right? We shared it with another alcoholic, and for me, a lot of the times in early sobriety, just the relief that I felt by sharing that with another human being gave me enough freedom to coast for a little while, right? So it was like, I felt like, you know, and it wasn't until later in sobriety or, you know, self-will riot came back and caught up with me that I really realized that that's what I had done, is I'd slapped this like spiritual band-aid on myself, right? Because it was just like, I was feeling some, it's like, you know, you hear over and over again, it's like, how free do you want to get here? And, you know, and I think that's what it means to me when it's asked, are you willing to go to any lengths, right? And ultimately it's like, how free do you really want to get? Like, what lengths are you willing to go to, right? And so for me, it was like, I felt a lot of freedom by just kind of dumping this on my sponsor and running. You know what I mean? Like doing this inventory, sharing it with another person. And in the beginning, it was like, I had this time of contemplation with God. that looks a lot different today than it did in the beginning. You know, I really thought that it was going to be kind of like, okay, take all this stuff from me, and now I'm going to be this brand new person. I'm very much the same person I am today as I was before I got sober. It's just, I am now learning the spiritual tools and principles of how to navigate life in a way that aligns with my values, morals, and beliefs, right? And faith that works is dead. It's like, I was always told, you know, if you are going to, if you have a toothache, you can't pray about it unless you're going to the dentist. You know what I mean? If you're like making an appointment, go to the dentist, right? I was telling you guys before the meeting that I just got this new job, and the career thing is just one of my things, right? It's something that I really, really struggle with. And so there's been a lot of prayer in that. There's been a lot of prayer without me taking action, right? And so it's like, for me to see the results here, it's like, this is a program of action. This is a spiritual principle that I learned in these steps, like in 8 and 9, of like putting this into practice and to clearing, you know, my side of the street. And that whole, we attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. That's another line that really jumps out to me here, because it's again, admitting that it's like, a lot of this is self-created, right? Like I did this, you know? But like Neve was saying, when I was making my inventory, it was all these people that had wronged me. It was all about, you know, like how I was being affected by the world, right? By doing an inventory and really looking at some of this stuff, I set the ball rolling here a lot of the time. Right. And then it's, you know, it's like I originally stepped on the toes of my fellows. They retaliated. And now I'm, oh my God, I can't believe they're treating me this way. You know what I mean? And there's a lot of self-induced chaos as a result of that. And I create a lot of harm. Right. Because I want y'all to live the way I think you should. And I think ultimately, one of the biggest, lessons I've learned here as a result of working these steps is that it's not selfish of me to live my life the way that I want to live it. It's selfish of me to expect you to, right? So before I got there, right, there was a lot of me expecting you to live the way live like the way I think you should, and a lot of me trying to force that agenda, right? And it hasn't been taken from me. There's a lot of self-will that's happened in sobriety, and I get to continue to like apply these steps when they come up. I only drank for 8 years, so some of the amends that I had to make were very like close-knit friends and family members. I didn't create as much wreckage in those 8 years as some of people who've been drinking for decades, you know. So I felt like my experience was less then because I didn't have like these big amends over my heads to make. But I've had to make a lot in sobriety, and that's been, I think we'll get to that here in a little bit, but that's been, I think, a bigger lesson, is like really kind of approaching people and practicing this in sobriety, not being like, well, I was drunk when I did it. You know what I mean? It's like, this is who I am. This is how I'm showing up. And the fact of the matter is, I'm selfish and self-centered to the core, and I'm going to manipulate the heck out of you guys to get what I want, you know? And a lot of harm is caused as a result of that. And I never really realized the ripple effect, because I was so consumed with self, of how I'm affecting other people, until I was approached with these tools and this program. I mean, it's been absolutely life-changing. So I think that's all I have to share on that little blurb.
Awesome. We are off to a roaring start. Thank you both. We're going to continue on page 76. Probably there are still some misgivings. As we look over the list of business acquaintances and friends we have hurt, we may feel diffident about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. To some people, we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them. At the moment, we're trying to put our lives in order, but that is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce that we've gone religious. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. Why lay ourselves open to being branded fanatics or religious bores? We might kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message. But our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. He is going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discoveries. Neve?
Sure. So much for that one. I mean, for me, I guess the thing that it makes me think of is that I need a sponsorship, right, to be able to do step nine. I need somebody to go over that list with me and like to tell me what to say and what I shouldn't say. Like if I came in, luckily the steps are in order for a reason, and like coming in on a pink cloud, you know what I mean? If I gone up to people when I'm like in that state of mind before I'm ready to make an amends, like it could be like leading with the chin and do a lot of damage, and that everything's great now, I'm sober now. You know what I mean? You should forgive me. Luckily it, you know, it, the steps are in order for a reason, and it took a while to get there. For me, it's like, it was never a question of whether I should approach with spirituality or not. It was a question of whether I should approach with whether I'm an alcoholic or not, you know? And like my sponsor gave me a script. She had me basically say to certain people, she had me say like, you know, hey, I'm an alcoholic. In order to stay sober, I need to right my wrongs. I've wronged you in the following ways. And then like list the ways and say like, am I forgetting anything? And what can I do to make it right? That's like the general script, right? But for some people, she told me not to say I'm an alcoholic. For some people, you know, it would be like a work colleague, some where it would be in my best interest for them not to know I was an alcoholic. Do you know what I mean? Maybe that I would say, you know, I've been thinking a lot about the past and I've wronged you and here's how I've wronged you, you know, yada, yada, yada. I love what Hannah just said about the, like, it's not an excuse. You know what I mean? Like, it's not an excuse. I'm an alcoholic. I was drunk and I did these things. And that's even less true. You can't, when you're making amends for stuff you did sober, you can't really say, well, I'm an alcoholic. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, that's true. And I'm like acting out of these character defects, but this person doesn't care. And it's all about like Hannah was saying, like cleaning my side of the street and of like the passage said, being of maximum service to God and my fellows and to not make things worse. Right. And so that's been my experience with it. And right now what my sponsor, my current sponsor, is having me write letters to people. And that's been, she's having me write letters to people, whether or not I will send them, because there are, I'll give you an example. Like I try to make amends to my ex-husband, but he didn't want to hear it. Like he never got back to me. And so I also have my ex-in-laws that I need to make amends to, but like, it's like, I can't make amends to them. It feels weird to talk to them without having talked to the ex-husband, you know, kind of thing. Anyway, she had me write out these letters and I thought it was just like a dumb exercise because I already have the five things written down, you know, from like the first time I did the eighth step, but it really has been, it's so different. It's been like kind of therapeutic to write it out, because to imagine them actually reading it, you know, and what do you say? And it's so different than that script that I just read off. Cause it's when you're having a conversation one-on-one with somebody, it's a conversation. And I don't read off that script like I'm a robot, but it gives a general guideline of like what I would say. But when it's a letter and it's like the only thing that they're ever going to read, you know what I mean? Like it has to be more conversational and it has to, it really, it's been really healing for me to be able to write it that way. And I put it in the little virtual God box, like a folder on my computer called God box, you know, for now. And I don't know what I'm going to do with them and whether eventually I'll mail them, but they're there for when I need to. I think maybe it talks about it next, so I don't want to go into it in terms of like being able to talk about the spiritual thing. Like that's what's been cool. I'll tell one story really fast about being of maximum service. I made amends to a friend of mine from high school. And her brother was struggling with alcoholism. And so she ended up telling her mom that I was sober. And so her mom started calling me and like asking for help. And I put the mom in touch with, you know, people like Debbie Sankster and stuff who had children that could, you know what I mean, were alcoholics and stuff. And so it that passage said, it gave me, making that amends and being honest about being an alcoholic put me in a position to help somebody else in another family that's struggling with alcoholism. And I'll let Hannah talk now.
Thank you, Neve.
Thanks, Neve. So I had a really similar experience to Niamh, where it was, I was in no situation to be talking to anybody about spirituality when I got here. This was something that has really taken a long time for me to cultivate, like what that relationship with my higher power was. And for a really long time, Alcoholics Anonymous was my higher power. You know what I mean? It's like, I would like laugh about it because it would be like, I wouldn't be like, what would Jesus do? I'd be like, what would a sober, responsible member of Alcoholics Anonymous do? You know what I mean? That was like my higher power for a really long time. And so when I made amends for the first time, it was very similar to Niamh in that, you know, it was like this very formal experience where I was sitting down with these people and there was like a lot of wreckage. You know, it was like, I got sober at 21. So it's like, I'm making amends for, you know, the last 20 some years of my life, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think I was making amends for when I was a baby, but you know what I'm saying? Like, I was making amends for this long period of time. And so it was like this really formal thing, especially with like my parents and you know, the people that lived really close to me about, you know, how I had treated them for over an extremely long time. And that it was like the first time that I was taking responsibility for my actions and admitting that it was wrong. And I could now see that, you know, and then you know, I was always taught that like amends is not like this apology, but it's like, I'm not going to say sorry for something I don't really feel like I should say sorry for. It's like, I am making, taking responsibility for actions that I am now willing to move forward and change my behavior with, you know, and I'm going to, you know, do that to the best of my ability. And so that's kind of what it looked like, but it was this very formal experience. Like I'm an alcoholic. This is part of my sobriety, right? And I think that that's what's changed so much for me about amends, because today it's not like this really formal sit down, like I'm an alcoholic and I need to take responsibility for my actions. It's just like really kind of in the moment, it's like the steps kind of lose the numbers, right? It just becomes a normal part of life. And when I'm wrong and admitting that to another human being. And in the beginning, I was doing this because I wanted to stay sober. You know, this was life or death, right? And today that's still true, but I have more of a better understanding as a result of continuing to do this process. That whole idea that like the purpose of this step is not for me to feel better, right? So it's like at the moment we were trying to put our lives in order. Yes, we are. But our real purpose, like Niamh said, is to be of maximum service. So it's like, there is a part of me that wants to feel better and do the right thing, right? But a good example of that is recently I owe an amends to somebody who was really close to me in this program, right? And I was talking to my sponsor and we were going back and forth and she was like, do you believe you owe this woman an amends? And I said, yes. And she said, for what? And so I said it after we had gone back and forth about what that looked like in my behavior and how I showed up in my selfishness and self-centeredness, right? So I just started to scratch the surface because in the beginning of that conversation, I didn't think I owed this woman an amends. It was like on talking with my sponsor and her kind of cutting some of the delusion that I was living in and helping me kind of readjust here and right size me. By the end of the conversation, I'm like, yes, I do owe this woman an amends and this is what I owe her for. And she's like, okay, so what would you say? And I told her what I thought I would say. And she was like, oh, you almost got it. And I was like, what? You know? And she has not allowed me to make this amends yet because she said, you've just now scratched the surface of this self-awareness and it's uncomfortable. So you're wanting to go and set it right without actually fully understanding what you're setting right. And it just kind of like melted all of this stuff over me because it was just like, I'm willing. I said, I'm willing. I'm going to go do it. I'm willing to go to any lengths. But it was like, oh, the spiritual principle behind this is that it's not anything to do with me and me feeling better, right? It's by doing this and me having a full understanding of how it is I affected this other human being and going to them and setting that right in a time that is more meaningful, is more important than me getting it done and checking it off. Because like, I like to have a little checkbox. I like to do the things and I like to do them so I don't feel guilty on. You know what I'm saying? It's like it was still for a very long time, this very self-propelled process for me. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's as far as I could get in the beginning. Like, there's nothing wrong. But at some point, I felt like this got deeper for me. I don't know if I'm making sense, but I've had like a really brand new experience with it. And I'm waiting to make amends to this woman until I have a sincere desire to do so, right? To make this right with her and not just to check off the box and say, I feel better. I hope that made sense. That's all I got to share in this paragraph.
Wonderful. All right. We are continuing on page 77. We don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God. When it will serve any good purpose, we are willing to announce our convictions with tact and common sense. The question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be he has done us more harm than we have done him. And though we may have acquired a better attitude toward him, we are still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret. Neve?
Okay. Just to piggyback off what Hannah was saying really quick, as I heard at a meeting the other night, Hannah, somebody say, do you want relief or do you want recovery? And that just, it made me think of you in that situation. Cause I'm the same way. It's like, I just want to feel better, you know? Okay. A person I hated, guys, I had to do that this year. I had to make amends to somebody that if Judge Judy like knew what happened, she'd be like, this guy harmed you way more than you harmed. You don't owe him an amends. You know what I mean? Like, it was like that. It was like black and white. Everybody would agree with me, whatever. And I moved, I had set similar to what Hannah just said. I left Richmond. I moved from Richmond, Virginia to Portland, Oregon in the fall of 2019. And right before I left, I set up a meeting with this person because I, you know, you're supposed to do amends in person. And it's like, I want to do it, whatever. And so I set up a meeting and everything. And my sponsor told me I wasn't ready because there was a ton of resentment still there. You know what I mean? And I was just doing it to check off the box. Like, it's like, okay, before I go, you know what I mean? Get this out of the way. And so she had me cancel the meeting. So I did. And then I come out here and then out of sight, out of mind, you know what I mean? And that's how, I mean, I guess that's how life is for me, out of sight, out of mind. That was something with my fourth step too. When there was somebody that I didn't know if I should put on my fourth step, and my friend Celia was like, well, what do you want? Because they live in New York and I don't see him anymore. You know what I mean? I'm not resentful. She's like, well, what do you want for her? And I was like, just for her marriage to fall apart, her career to fail. She's like, I think she should be on the list. I'm like, okay. So it's like the same thing with this person. It's like, I'm not seeing them. I'm not thinking about them. I don't know, whatever. And so it wasn't until the spring. So I moved out here, remember, like canceled the amends with him in the fall of 2019. It wasn't until the spring of 2021 that like this person, it started haunting me. Do you know what I mean? Like, I could not get this person out of my head. And my sponsor was like, well, there's one solution to that. You know, it's time to make amends. So I was like, ah, and it was the hardest amends I ever had to make. It was like, there was lots of prayer involved and lots of prayer and talking to my sponsor, and it was hard. It ended up being great though. You know what I mean? Like, it ended up being great because that person is not haunting me anymore. Like, it's just like, she was right. That was like the thing I needed to do to close the door on that chapter. You know what I mean? And like a lot of the resentment, I don't want to say that all the resentment's gone, but a lot of the resentment's gone from doing that. And so it has been that, but I think that's the only person that I've ever hated that I had to make amends to. There are other people I didn't like that I had to make amends to, but this was one where it's just like, it's, are you effing kidding me? This guy messed me up. But I'm really glad that I did it because I have that closure now. And I know that my side of the street is clean. That's all I got. Hannah, who do you hate?
Thanks, Neve. Hannah? Thank you.
So to kind of go off of what Neve said when she was like, well, what do you want for this girl? And you were like, oh, I want all these bad things to happen for her. So that was kind of part of the process of me, you know, sitting on this amends with my sponsor. And it's not like I'm just sitting here waiting for God to strike me ready to do it, right? It's like faith without works is dead, like this chapter talks about. And so there's been a lot of prayer, and what that prayer looks like is my sponsor has me praying for this person and praying that they get everything out of life that I want for myself, right? And as a process of like this continual prayer, it's kind of, I have like all these like resentments and icy feelings towards this person, which is why, you know, I showed up in a particular way, you know, and stepped on the toes of my fellows, right? Because you were already affecting me in a way that I didn't like. And the process of prayer, continual prayer for this person has allowed me to see this person as another human being, you know, another child of God. And there's been so much compassion that has moved into my heart as a result of doing that. Right. And I thought like, if I continue to pray about this person, have to think about this person all the time, that I'd just be obsessed with it. But it's like bringing it into my prayer life in that way has been like, there's been a move, and it's like compassion is, I feel like, the key to making amends. Right. And like I said, there weren't a lot of people in the beginning, in my initial 8-step list to make amends to outside of my family and some close friends. But one of them was this girl that, we were best friends in middle school and going into high school. And we were horrible to each other. There was a lot of competition. There was a lot of, betrayal and distrust and alarm, that a lot of harm that was caused on both sides. I very much saw the harm that I had caused her. But I was still pretty angry at the harm that she had caused me. As a result of doing this work, I was willing to make amends, right? Like I just had this willingness. And again, I can't say whether it was because I really wanted to make things right with her or I just wanted to feel better, but I had a willingness. And so I reached out to her and she was unwilling to hear my amends, you know? And that was the only person that I reached out to that was unwilling to hear my amends. As a result of that, you know, it's like, I think God does for me what I can't do for myself. And it's like, I wasn't really ready to make that amends. I was ready to the best of my ability at that time. But over the past, you know, several years in sobriety and applying this stuff, the amount of compassion and forgiveness that I have for this girl is like, it's so powerful. I never believed that I could feel this for this other girl. And it's making me cry. But we like grew up together, you know, and last year her dad passed suddenly, you know, and I was just torn apart because this was a man that had done, he took me on vacations. Every time he would like buy her gifts, he was buying me gifts. It was like, we had this really close, I was like a daughter to him. Right. And so I was moved like from within me to reach out to her, even though I've been trying for years to get this girl to come and hear my amends, and she was unwilling to hear it. And here I was finally reaching out to her at a time where I had a sincere desire, right? And I didn't even care if things were right with us. It was just on my heart to let her know how sorry I was to hear about her dad. And if there's anything that she ever needed, that I would be there, you know? And she knew that I meant it. And there was this outpouring of love back from her, you know? And if I had gone to her when I was willing to make my amends years ago and gave her this like, sorry, I did this, 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 and this, and this little checkoff list without this like compassion I had in my heart for her, I don't know if you know that I would have had the same results. And I think that was so God created, you know what I mean? It's like, how do you not talk about the spiritual life when it comes to amends? There's so much of God in all of this. It's just pretty amazing. I had something else to say, but I totally forgot because I wasn't even expecting to say that story. Oh, what I was going to say is that I do think that as hard as it was trying to approach somebody who I dislike or I hated, right? And the ego and pride smashing that had to occur, like that, you know, humbling process of going to someone. I almost disagree with that. Sometimes it's harder to go to a friend, right? It's harder to go to somebody that's in my everyday life, right? Because it's like a lot of the times these are people, the people that are still in my life are people that I like to a close friend, I want to more often than not continue that relationship. And so I've always been taught that I'm going into these amends to set right my side of the street and not necessarily mend a relationship, like not be attached to the outcome of what that would look like. Like I'm not making amends so that we can still be in this relationship together. And that's so hard for me to differentiate with people that I'm really close to in my life. I had to go and be really honest with a good friend recently. And I ended up having to make amends because I was directed to be honest with this girl. And I was. And I was honest about how I felt. And then I stepped into her side of the street and told her how she should have, what she should have done and how she could have done better. Right. And that was my honest, like I was trying to be honest, right? And then I had to call my sponsor and tell her what I said. And I had this like bad gut feeling about it. And she was like, oh gosh, you didn't say that. And I was like, I did. And she was like, I think that you just, you're not feeling right about it because you didn't stay in your lane, right? So then I ended up having to go and sit down with this girl who I feel a really certain type of way about and say, hey, you know, it is not up to me how you live your life. I feel hurt by some of the choices that you have made, but I think you should absolutely do what you're doing. And like through this process, I again gained compassion that like, she's going to go live her life. Right. And I'm going to live my life. And if they overlap, but like me putting in my hands in there and trying to force this particular outcome or make a relationship look a particular way, it's just me playing God. And it's like, I really am here to do God's work, not his job, you know? And, the ninth step has really showed me how to do that because I want to know, like before I know what the outcome is going to be, I'm attached to outcomes. I am a very loyal person. Like I like personal relationships mean a lot to me. And so sometimes in me having to go to you and admit that I'm wrong and clear that, it's harder for me to go to a friend than somebody I hate because, you know, it feels good to set that's my street, clear my side of the street, sorry, with somebody I dislike. But to do it with somebody who is, I'm attached to the outcome is really difficult. So that's all I got.
I think you're muted, David.
Bueller. Okay, page 77. Thank you, Nia. I wrote down, my job is to do God's work, not his job as money. Sorry, page 77. Under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply, we tell him that we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. We are there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so. Never trying to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man we are calling upon admits his own faults. So feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. Our former enemies sometimes praise what we are doing and wish us well. Occasionally, they will offer assistance. It should not matter, however, if someone does throw us out of his office. We have made our demonstration, done our part. It's water over the dam. Neve.
Okay. Yeah, for the first part with the not mention the faults, I'll go back to the person I hated. Just one thing that I got to say to him that was, I guess, the most freeing. He was like, oh, this is really good to hear. You know, when I listed off the things I had done wrong, and he was like, I thought I was the only one that, you know, messed up. And I said, so I got to say to him, no, I was really sick. You know what I mean? I was like, it was the perfect storm of sickness. And so that's like what I got to focus on, is like, where was I sick? Not what the other person did and stuff like that. I want to talk about the expecting the unexpected, because that's been 100% my experience. You know, like I went into some that I thought would be easy. I ended up getting lectured, you know. I went into this one with a professor and I was dreading it because I thought she hated me. She probably did hate me, I don't know. But she told me that she's like, oh, I know what you're doing. She's like, I went to NA in grad school. I was doing a little bit too much coke. And I was like, oh, okay. You know what I mean? So it was like stuff like that. It's just been crazy. There's that, oh, that girl that I wished her marriage would fail and her career would, whatever, that one, I'd make amends to her. And that was a tricky one because, you know, like it says in the step that it's like, we make amends except when, you know, we would harm others. And one of the main thing I had to make amends to this girl for was that I tried to have an affair with her husband. And I didn't know if she knew. I was pretty sure she knew, but I wasn't sure, you know. And she's still married to that husband and they have a kid now. And so my sponsor was like, you can't say that, you know, think that'll cause harm. And so she said to leave it up to her in that space where I say, did I forget anything? Like, am I leaving anything out? Right. And so I'm there, like, she couldn't meet in person. I was up in New Jersey. I tried to see her in New York City. She couldn't meet. I went to a meeting. I'm like sitting in my car, crying to this girl, making amends for being a bad cat sitter. Cause that's like the only other thing I had to make amends for. You know what I mean? And I'm crying. She's like, are you okay? And I was like, yeah. And I was like, is there anything I left out? And she's like, no. I was like, Katie, is there anything? Like, I was like, please just take this for me. You know what I mean? And she said, no. And so it's like, I've got to live with that. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't get to make amends for that and I have to live with it. My dad was another one that's kind of funny. He hasn't had a drink in like, I don't know how many years, maybe 5 years now, but he's definitely, you would argue, one of us. I grew up in an alcoholic household, let's say. And he the only time he ever did AA was when he got, after his third DUI. They were a lot more lenient back then in the 80s. After his third DUI, he just had to do 28 days court ordered. And he had to go to like AA meetings. And so when I said, I was like, hey, daddy, I was like, I haven't had a drink for a year. And he's like, that's great. Cause he would take breaks too. He's like, good for you. And I was like, yeah, but I was like, in order to stay sober, I've got to right my wrongs. And he's like, uh-oh. He's like, this sounds like some AA shit. And I was like, no, dad, please just listen. And I said, like, you know, I disrespected your, you know, I disrespected you. He's like, get out of here. And I was like, you know, I manipulated you for money. He's like, whatever I have is yours. And I was like, you know, I said like the things and everything he like rebuked. And I was like, what can I do to make it right? He goes, you can shut the hell up. And then he was like, you know, those AA people, he was like, he's so off. He was like, it was started by two priests down on Skid Row. It's like, And he's like, they've got those 10 steps. It's like, close, dad. He's like, the first thing I want to do is take a step away from those people. He's like, they stopped drinking. It changes their personality. And I was like, yeah, a little, you know, like it was just so funny. So it's like, that didn't go the way I thought it would. And then one more recent one was this professor, David Brody. When I moved out here, I couldn't find a job. It took me a year and a half to find a job. And it's one of these things where at the time it was like, filled with like resentment and self-pity. And you know what I mean? Like it just, my ego was crushed. I finished the PhD in at William & Mary, you know what I'm out here. And I like, can't find anything. And yeah, it was rough. It was like, when I first moved out here, my sponsor was like, don't start waiting tables. You don't want to put that out to the universe. And I was like, okay. And then by the, like after a couple of months, she's like, have you looked at 7-Eleven? I was just like, oh, like it's like total ego smashing. Right. Anyway. So it's like, I was applying for this job that I needed like an academic reference for. And I hit up my master's professor, like this guy, David Brody, that's never seen me sober. Like I was very drunk when I was in his classes and I taught for him and I was very drunk. And at one point he even kind of 12-stepped me. He said, he knew I wanted to apply to a PhD program. And he said, if you keep doing what you're doing, you're never going to get into a PhD program. And like, it just, for, I was able to stop drinking for like the, whatever, I don't know, a couple of months it took me to write my master's thesis. And that's, that master's thesis is what got me into a PhD program. And a funny thing about that is like, after I stopped drinking, the first thing that I wrote, I was in my PhD program when I got sober. And the first thing I wrote sober, my professor who accepted me, that my professor in the PhD program who accepted me into the PhD program, based on that thing that I wrote dry when I was in my master's program, he said, oh, this is the old Neve. Like, where has this Neve been? And it's like, oh, you can tell. I thought I was a better writer drunk, but apparently it's clear when I'm not drinking. Anyway, so I wrote to this professor and I asked him if he could be a reference. And one of the questions he had was, he was like, okay. And he said, what have you been up to since you left New York? And I was like, fuck. Like, I owe him an amends. But I wanted to do it in person, you know what I mean? But it's like, this God presented me this opportunity, right? So I like wrote to him, I pulled it up. And I said, I spent the majority of my time since leaving New York in AA meetings. I said, I wanted to tell you this in person, but this seems like the perfect opportunity to be honest with you. I don't know if you remember, but I was a functioning mess. You must remember because you basically 12-stepped me. You told me that I wouldn't get into a PhD program if I kept doing what I was doing. I'm so grateful for you because that talk woke me up and got me sober long enough to finish my master's thesis and actually get into William & Mary. But once I got into William & Mary, my alcoholism got even worse. I hit my bottom, you know, right after I passed my comps, and I went to my first AA meeting on May 22nd, 2013. And thankfully I haven't had a drink since. And then I got to, I said, I owe you an amends, David. Again, I wish this was in person, but my sponsor said it's okay to do it via email since we're talking about it. My drinking got in the way of me being the best student, TA, and research assistant I could be, and that you deserved. I wish I could do it over again sober and show you how much your mentorship meant to me. Please let me know if there's anything specific I'm forgetting that I did that harmed you, and please let me know what I can do to make it right. And he wrote back. Hold on, let me see if I can find it. He said, hi, Neve, how wonderful to get this email. I'm so psyched that you're in recovery. And as Mark Maron says, doing the thing. That's wonderful. And clearly it has led you to an easier and enlightened path. I appreciate and accept your amends. You are one of the smartest students I've ever worked with, and I miss having you in New York. And it's like, that wouldn't have happened. It wouldn't have happened for a lot of things. You know what I mean? It wouldn't have happened if I hadn't had this bottom, you know, of my ego, where it's like I needed to reach out for help to get the recommendation. And it wouldn't have happened if I wasn't willing, you know what I mean, to have this opportunity. And my sponsor encouraged me to do it via email. And so to get to have that closure with him, because who knows about, you know, then COVID happened. I don't know the next time I'm going to be in New York. But I'll tell you one thing is that this program has taught me that one thing I learned from this program is that I can't see God through the windshield. I can only see him through the rearview mirror. And so that year and a half that I was unemployed ended up being a huge blessing for stuff like that. It got me closer to God. And my dog that, I don't know if you can see the portraits behind me that I was sort of obsessed with, my dog, he ended up dying that year. He was diagnosed with congestive heart failure. So I got to be home for the last year of his life. So it's like this program, it's like when I came in and I thought I was at my bottom, and coming into AA was the best thing that ever happened for me. It's like, I don't know what's good for me. And so it's like these moments that I think are the worst actually end up being the best. And I'll let Hannah talk now.
Thank you. Hannah?
Thanks, Neve. So I think I kind of touched on this paragraph when I was sharing about the paragraph before, about how we never argue, right? And like Neve said, it's like what I was instructed to do with my amends is to go to this person to set right my wrongs and take responsibility for the harm that I caused. But the reality of that is that, like, I'm a blackout drinker, right? So, like, I don't even know fully, you know? And even in sobriety, it's like, I'm not God. Like, I don't know how you feel about how I made you feel, you know? I know, I can feel it in my gut, right? And I can know the actions that I took that go against my values, morals, and beliefs, and how you kind of cut the you know, edge of that, right? Because it comes out sideways at these people. But I am leaving that opportunity to be like, is there anything I left out, like Neve said, right? Because a lot of the times it's like, I don't even think I fully comprehend. I may not even know, right? And I remember specifically because I would hear people be like, you know, they would leave that opportunity and be like, is there anything I left out? And then they would get chewed out for like 45 minutes, right? And I didn't really have that experience. Again, I only drank for 8 years. The wreckage that I caused wasn't, it was different. It looked different than a lot of what I heard in meetings, you know? But I do remember specifically when I made amends to my brother. And that was a really hard amends for me to make. Again, it's like the people that were really close to me were really difficult for me. And my brother is 12 months and 2 weeks apart from me. Like, so we were supposed to be Irish twins. He was early, I was late, you know what I mean? But we grew up like twins, right? We have a lot of codependent behaviors. So I thought this one was gonna be easy peasy, you know? He was just gonna be proud of me. And I went and I made amends to him. We were like outside, we were walking around this pond, and he would like hear me out. And then he would like stop and be like, well, yeah. And then he was like the one person that was like telling me really how I made him feel, you know? And it was like, I didn't really expect to hear that, especially from him, you know? And then the next day he calls me and he goes, you forgot to say about how you totaled my car. And I was like, you're right. I did do that. I did. And I forgot to make amends for that when I was making my amends to you. And part of me, you know, my little ego wanted to be like, screw you, man. Do you know how hard that was for me to do? But it was like, yeah, I forgot to make amends for that. And, you know, he was calling to let me know that. And there was no rebuttal that I could really have at that point. You know what I mean? And I'm really glad that he thought about it. It actually made me feel really good that he was doing everything in his power with the tools that he had to make sure that we were, you know, we were clear. Our relationship was unblocked as a result of that. So that was my experience of no rebuttal. But I think we have another paragraph. We're running out of time, so I'll let you read that at the end.
Awesome. Yeah, I think I'll tell you what, I'll read both of these paragraphs quickly and then you guys just do another little speed wrap. Page 78, most alcoholics owe money. We do not dodge our creditors, telling them what we are trying to do. We make no bones about our drinking. They usually know it anyway, whether we think so or not, nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory it may cause financial harm. Approached in this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us. Arranging the best deal we can, we let these people know we are sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we have to go, for we are liable to drink if we are afraid to face them. And on page 79, although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding. Reminding ourselves that we have decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience, we ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. We may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we are willing. We have to be. We must not shrink at anything. Neve?
Okay. I'm glad we're skipping over the money one pretty quick, because I didn't owe creditors, you know what I mean? Like I owe my ex-husband $350. So that's hanging on to that for when that happens. And then I owed this kid, I puked in his shoes. And I told him I'd buy him a new pair of Nikes and I never did. So, but he's like married and my sponsor told me that like, it might be weird if I got in touch with him. So she said to just donate it. So it's like paid it forward, you know? And then it's a little complicated thing with my mom. It's like, I have a history of manipulating my mom for money, but she also has a history of buying my love and affection. So it's, so my sponsor and I are trying to figure out like how much I owe her based on how much did I manipulate. But it's like, also what if I refuse several times when she tries to give me something and she still gives it to me, it's like, I don't owe her for that. So she's got her own wounds. So we're still working that out, but I definitely owe her the money. But I want to focus mostly on the last paragraph, the going to any lengths. Sometimes I hate it. Sometimes, it's like the leveling of pride and you know what I mean? It doesn't come naturally. I hate it. I'm always going to do it. I want to stay sober. Like, I want to be here. I want to set right my wrongs. I want to get closer to God. I want to stay sober. For me, my life got really small at the end of my drinking. I resented everybody. I hated everybody. It was just, it wasn't good. I would hide from people. And that was something my sponsor said, like, you know, you owe an amends. If you run into somebody at the grocery store and you want to hide behind the cereal display, you know what I mean? They should probably be on your fourth step. And that's how I was living my life, was like hiding from people, you know? And the ninth step, allows me to not hide anymore. And it physically happened one time when I thought I had made amends to everybody that I owed amends to at William & Mary. And I was waiting tables, in Richmond, and a professor walked in, and my gut reaction, I literally ducked down behind the cash register. Like, I saw, it was like a physical, my body knew I owed her an amends before my mind did. Do you know what I mean? And I was like, shit, like, what do I owe her? And I had to rack my brain, and it's like, oh, okay. Yeah. And I thought of it. Like, I literally, she wasn't morally revealed. She wasn't on my list at all. And so I got to make amends to her, but it's like that reaction that I had, that's how I was living my life, literally hiding behind things. Cause I didn't want to face you. I couldn't face you. And what the ninth step has done for me is like allowed me to walk with my head up, allowed me to look people in the eye, and something like when I go into an amends, I don't go in alone. I bring God with me. Like, that's like the number one thing. It's like, I ask God to come with me, to give me, give me the clarity, to keep my mouth shut, all of those things. So God walks in with me and God walks out with me. And it's something that, it's an amazing experience, as like, as much as it levels my pride and whatever, and no matter what happens, even if they throw me out of the office, like it says in the big book, it's like, I've got God with me, so I'm not alone. I'll let you go, Hannah.
Thanks, Neve. I'll try to be really quick. So financial amends, again, I didn't have a lot of those. The only financial amend I had is that I used to steal money from the tip jar at the deli I worked at so I could go buy whiskey. And so I owed these people I worked with their tips, right? This is when I was living in Boulder, Colorado. I have no idea where these people are now. I had a bottom in Boulder, Colorado. And so I went out to Boulder and made a round of amends. And this financial one was more of like a spiritual one, because I was always taught that it's like, if we have these financial amends and it's like, oh, I don't have the money, it's like, well, the money I'm spending is not mine anyway, because I owe all this money over here, right? And so although I couldn't find these people that I worked with, and a lot of them, I don't even remember their names. I was drunk. I went and I put money into the tip jar at the deli that I used to work at. Nobody that I know still works there. Those guys probably just were super psyched when they checked their tip jar at the end of the night. But it was like a spiritual amends that I got to make with my finances, because it was not my money to spend and I couldn't keep holding on to it because I was going to pay a spiritual price for that. And so even though it didn't go to those people, it's no longer, you know, weighing me down in my pocket. And the one thing I wanted to say that this paragraph talks about, it says, we ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. Anytime the big book says we ask, if no one's told you that, that's a prayer. So I ask, I pray, you know, God, please give me the strength and courage and to carry this out, basically, right? There have been times in my sobriety that I've gotten really confused about that. And I've been asking for the strength and courage to carry out my own will, right? So at first I have to get right with God about what that is, and then ask for the strength and courage to carry it out, because of myself, I am not able to, you know. This ninth step, this is the bread and butter of this. This is really where like the rubber hits the road. And I am changed as a result of it. I feel like we touched on a lot just now. If you have any questions about that, I'll be here to answer any questions, and just thank you guys for having us. I'm really grateful to be here. So thanks, Neve.
Thank you both so much. That was absolutely amazing. We'll do a little bit of business here and close the meeting. Everybody will have the opportunity to thank Hannah and Neve again after we pray. Put a code up there on the screen. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. And if you missed the QR codes, there's links in the chat as well. And our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. Are there any announcements tonight for the good of AA? Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us. If you're shy, feel free to send an email to info@simpleactions.net. In closing, thank you both again for sharing. Thank everyone who participated. And after the, we'll unmute and do the Lord's Prayer. But first, I wonder if Morgan would read the last, technically three paragraphs on page 164.
Got you. I'm Morgan. I'm an alcoholic. This is a vision for you from Big Book, page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
All right. So that's it for us tonight. I would invite everyone to unmute, and we can virtually circle up and virtually hold hands and have a nice, confusing cacophony of the Lord's Prayer after a moment of silence. Our Father.
Father,
who art in heaven,
hallowed be thy name.
Thy kingdom come.
Thy will be done.
On earth as it is in heaven.
Give us this day our daily bread.
And forgive us our
trespasses,
as we forgive those who trespass against us.
And lead us not into temptation,
but deliver us from evil.
Thine is the kingdom,
power, and the glory,
forever and ever.
Amen.
Well, you need both so much.
Thank you, Adam. Great job.
Thank you, Ben. Happy to have you
guys.
Thanks, Nate.
Great job.
Thanks.
Great job, guys. Thanks.
Thank you.
Very good meeting.
Thank you all.
You did a fantastic job last Thursday.
Thank you so much.
Nate and Hans, great job.
Thanks, Lee. Thanks for coming.
All right, no problem.
I love
you. Always good to see you guys.
Good to see
you. Beautiful meeting, y'all. Thanks so much.
It's good to hear you too, Lee. You got that buttery.